Hi, this is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio. Each week, we give you the best news, views, and interviews from the health technology world. From CEOs and founders to entrepreneurs and clinicians, the companies and people that are shaping the future face of healthcare. All on the world's number one talk health radio.
Hello and welcome to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost. Each week we bring you the best news, views and interviews with the leaders, clinicians, sports people, journalists that are changing the face of healthcare in the UK and beyond. As regular listeners know, I am a founder and CEO of a health tech business myself, which is called PocDoc. And PocDoc has revolutionized how we can screen for heart attacks and strokes with our Healthy Heart Check, which is now the number one diagnostic test on the high street in the UK. And if you want to get it, you can go to Boots, you can go to Superdrug, you can go to any of these places, and it will give you your cholesterol levels, your heart age, your overall risk of having a heart attack or stroke, all in 10 minutes just using your phone. And thank you very much to PocDoc for all of the support. So on to today's show. Thank you very much to everyone that's listening. We get downloads now in over 50 countries every week, including Brazil, which is quite relevant for my guest today. And we really appreciate it. So if you're watching on YouTube, thank you for tuning in. If you're listening on UK Health Radio live, we love being live on UK Health Radio. Thank you so much, Johan, for the live platform. And if you are watching this on my Instagram channel, thank you. This is where we put the best clips up. It's at Steve Roost. And obviously, if you're listening on your podcast channel of choice. So on to today's show. Today's is a super special show, and I'm super excited about today's show. As some people know through other channels like on LinkedIn and Instagram, about 10 months or so ago, I started doing jiu-jitsu, and I was lucky enough to be accepted into a gym in Geneva, which was run by my guest today, Igor Araujo. So this is the first time that we've had a professional fighter on the show. We've had an Olympian on the show before, but that was in heptathlon, which is completely different. So it's a real honor to have Igor on the show today. So Igor is an absolute legend of the sport and a champion martial artist, a former professional fighter in the biggest promotions in the world, including UFC and Bellator, UFC being the largest by some way. He's a four-time European Jiu-Jitsu champion, and he's my coach, and also, really importantly, he's also my daughter's coach, and my daughter absolutely loves going to the gym here. So Igor, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hello, Steve. Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me. Let's have fun.
Yeah, let's have fun. So I want to kind of move around a little bit today. So, but I'd like to start because you were born in Brasilia. Is that right?
Born in Brasilia, Brazil, the capital.
Is it okay? And what was it like? We're a broad church. We've got listeners from 50 countries who have like a really wide range of interests. So can you paint them a picture? What was it like as a kid in Brasilia when you grew up?
Brasilia
there?
Is like it's a nice city. It's different of everything. So normally people, when you think about Brazil, they talk about beach or, I don't know, sun and everything. Brazil is kind of like more buildings, a lot of cars. There's not much to do. Okay. So it's pretty hard for people. When I was born there, I loved there. But people, when you come there for the first time, nobody likes it. So it's not the best city in Brazil, but I love there.
Okay.
And, I had a childhood. I was there till my 15.
Okay.
And then I have to go to Minas Gerais.
Okay.
But I grew up there in Brasilia. I had a crazy childhood there.
What was it like?
Nice. Was nice. Was very nice. We were like all till 11 night on the street playing around all the time. Yeah, that time was not that violent.
Okay.
Not violent, but it was a very violent childhood that I had because we had to fight in the street like every day, but for fun.
Okay.
That was kind of our lifestyle, and but it was like a different violence that we have today. Today's things changed a lot.
So is it like, you know, like child, like kids wrestling and kid fighting, or was it more serious?
It was punched in the face and everything. I remember one time I fought a guy. We fought for an hour there. Me and this kid were playing football. Everything started in football, soccer, and then we always finish fighting because that ball is mine, now it's yours, and then things start.
Then it just goes.
I fought this guy for 40 minutes. I had the cops around him, everybody really? Watching. Even his mama was watching. I'd say, let's go, man. It was, but that was my childhood, was okay. really good.
And how were your parents with that kind of, like,
yeah,
they were happy?
You know, my parent, he was a bad alcoholic, very, very bad at this time. So he was never around. So I had to grow by myself a little bit. My mom was there, but it was, I have a brother and sister. So it was like kind of me and God. I was always like, I had to take care of myself all the time. So that's why I think so. It was pretty like intense for me because kids, the other kids, they saw that I didn't have a father around me.
Right.
And then they went straight away every time, Igor, Igor, Igor. And then thanks, I could protect myself. I could do it well.
And were you training in jiu-jitsu at this point?
No.
Or like what happened?
No, that I tell my kids, I tell the kids in the gym, Ryan and all the students that I have, that if I had jiu-jitsu at that time, I could be the king of the neighborhood. But I didn't. So I had to do things by myself, get some stones sometimes
right.
and throw in wow. people because they are bigger than me, stronger right. than me. But I could always protect myself. Some I could find a way to do it. But it was hard. It was hard at that time.
Do you think that your kind of that experience, was that unique to you? Or in that time, in that place, did lots of people have that experience?
You know, in Brazil, we grow up like always fighting. Okay. We always fight. Now it's different because now everybody has guns, mm-hmm. knives, that's the violence now. For us, it was like a way to build your character. You know what I mean? So it was good. I miss it. Sometimes I tell my boys, you never fought on the street. You're missing something because that time was really good. Like it yeah. was like we could fight and half hour later we are together and having fun and say, yeah, I won the fight. No, you won. Okay, so mm-hmm. let's see. Let's next time. And today things changed. But I don't know if they still do that. But when I was a kid there, it was like almost every day this kind of situation.
And your first love was football, is that correct?
Yeah, I love football.
Was it? But is it so? As an English person growing up, watching World Cups and things, and just seeing Brazilian teams be just like almost like these gods, you know? Like we have this romanticized ideal that everyone in Brazil just plays football the whole time and things like that. Like, what was it? What was it like?
Yeah,
is it like that?
We love. I'm a Vasco da Gama supporter, so okay. we used to fight because some guys say your team is not good, but my team is better. So we fought for everything.
Okay.
And it's nice too because when I came here. And what you do, in, like in the airport, you play Brazilian, they see the passport, you play football? No, jiu-jitsu, what it is?
Really?
Then we had to explain what was it, because when I first came here, we had few jiu-jitsu professors, but not like we have now.
Mm.
But it was like at the beginning, things were starting, and because at that time, Brazil was all about football.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was amazing. You know, I was watching the World Cup, all the matches, all the football games that I could watch, I was watching. And it's still my passion. My two kids, my three kids, they all play football.
Yeah.
And we love football there. But I think like now the jiu-jitsu passed football a little okay. bit in my heart.
In your heart.
Yeah.
And when did you start doing jiu-jitsu, and did you know about it growing up, or like how did you first encounter the sport?
Yeah, at that time we have a lot of jiu-jitsu in Rio de Janeiro, São okay. Paulo, but we didn't have in Brasília.
Okay.
I have a lot of capoeira.
Okay.
Had a little capoeira there, but not jiu-jitsu. But
and capoeira is more like dance fighting,
it
right?
It does, but it's fight. Also, we have some good okay. capoeira fighters too, you know?
Okay.
But they all, in the end of the day, they go to jiu-jitsu too, to do both together. But capoeira is like, you get good skills when you do it, you
okay.
know, fast thinking and this kind of thing.
Okay.
So it's not only a dance, because I know some guys, they can fight hard. They just do capoeira.
Right.
You know, but but it's not like jiu-jitsu. But at that time in Brazil, we didn't have. So what we do, you used to watch these Royce Gracie tapes, VHS,
yeah,
and try the things on the street.
Seriously,
so that was the jiu-jitsu we had.
Really, you were just doing it,
just doing this kind of things,
wow.
because it was hard to have it. We didn't have internet, no YouTube, so you right. had to do things by yourself.
Was this in the 90s? This was
it
probably
was till 2003-04. Yeah. It was something like that. And if you I want to do jiu-jitsu, you have to go somewhere else,
yeah.
Rio and São Paulo. But I couldn't afford the okay. life there, so. I was in Brasilia doing this thing, playing football at that time.
Professionally or?
No. I was a young kid, 14. Even the football in Brasilia was not that big. Politicals are big in Brasilia. Not football at that time. You had two teams and they are not that good.
Okay.
They were playing the fourth league, something like this.
Okay.
I don't know. It was quite bad. But I was playing. And then my father got sick, he had to go somewhere. We went to Minas Gerais.
Is that another place?
Another state.
Okay.
We went to Patos de Minas, the city of my mother, because my mother had to send us to live with my grandmama. Because we were completely broke.
Oh, really?
At the time, so we had to go there and start the life there. So I played some football there for a few years, and then I went to army. And then at this time, I was all about fighting. I was playing football, but I didn't like it anymore. But it was all about jiu-jitsu for me. I was trying to find a place to train, but okay. We didn't have. And then, I don't know, people start talking about jiu-jitsu, but in a good neighborhood, it was quite expensive for me.
Okay.
I couldn't afford it.
Was it considered at the time to be a kind of a thing that you did if you had money, jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, that was expensive sport there.
Oh,
it's still expensive, but now you can train everywhere.
Right.
You can go everywhere and train, but at that time you couldn't. So it was pretty expensive. I remember day one that I watched the training, and then there I start training. It took like 2 years to have money to pay for my first month. And the first month that I could pay, it was after my father's death.
Okay.
Because he passed away. That the government sent us some money, and then I bought my gi with this money.
Wow.
This money, I went straight to buy my gi. That I touched it, and then I ordered my gi, and the week later, I was training jiu-jitsu.
Do you feel like, and we can come on to like mental strength and mental toughness, like that upbringing, that experience, must have created a huge amount of resilience.
Believable. Because you have to believe to go far.
Yeah.
It's like you have to make the unbelievable believable. You know, you have to trust, because we Brazilians, I always tell people, like they say, American jiu-jitsu, European jiu-jitsu, this. But if it was for the Americans, jiu-jitsu would not be anywhere like we have today.
Right.
Because the Brazilians, we can. Okay. We have also some good wrestlers, good sambo guys, good jiu-jitsu. But we, the Brazilians, we went everywhere to teach.
Yeah.
We eat the bread that is smashed by devil in Brazil.
It seems to me, as a beginner in the sport, even that a lot of the good gyms or clubs are led by Brazilians all over the world.
Yeah, it's still
like
spread. You have this in the blood, you know, and the way we teach, you know, but the toughness we have, like you, when you go, I was talking with somebody last week. He told me, like, I told the guy, good family. He's living in Germany. I told him, why don't you come to Geneva? Your father wants you to live here.
Mm.
He told me, no, I'm in Germany. If I come here, it's going to be hard. I don't have my friends. And and you know, the movie was in my head like, man, I came all the way from Brazil. I came here. I had $14 in my pocket. No place to stay.
So
and I don't know what future was holding me.
We'll get into that. But what's really interesting, I think, is when you... And I'd love to get your thought on this, but a lot of people that have had really incredible success in a particular thing, like you have within sport, your sport, often have a series of traumatic events in their history that they've had to overcome that creates this kind of like a mentality that this incredible mental strength.
It's like you have two ways to go, or the bad way or the good way. You are going to learn good things and bad things. And the way you transform them for you is up to you. You know what I mean? So, of course, I could have gone to the bad way, but I choose the good way. I saw so many bad things when I was a child, when I was a kid, that I want the day that I have my kids, I want them out of it.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm doing good now.
Yeah.
And I could transform. I drank twice in my life.
Right.
And I don't like alcohol, I don't like beer, I don't like whiskey, no wine, nothing. Because I see how bad this kind of thing can be for somebody, you know. So I transform the bad in good.
Yeah.
And some people, they when they have bad things, they just like, they become bad and they think that the excuse is the life you had before. But I don't think, I didn't see things this way, you know. And I think not only myself, but a lot of people from Brazil, they are like this. Because you have a bad life, you have a hard thing. Not bad life, but tough life.
Difficult.
Life is always good.
Yeah.
But you have tough life, but you can make it good. You know what I mean? You can be positive, even if you are inside a negative thing. So that was my goal. When I came, when I was there, I had all the ways, the keys to open the bad doors, but I never did. I was always like, I think in all my friends, those in Brazil, the only one that never did drugs in my life.
Right.
They went, because I went to Minas, when I came back, they were all heavy drugs.
Is that right?
Some of them went to jail, some of them were dead, of them were the rehab. And wow. Igor,
what's
you
the
never?
Rehab, sorry?
Rehabilitation.
Oh, rehab. Okay,
rehab,
yeah.
You know what I mean? So they went to rehab, and then they were like, hey, listen, Igor, you never did drugs? I said, no. Never smoked, no. And they were like, man, you're crazy. And they were all afraid of me because I could beat them up now. I couldn't turn it my way, but I didn't.
Okay.
So I was all about to be good, to use it for good.
That's amazing. And so at what point after you got your gi, you started to train? When did, because there's training and there's training hard. This is, as I see it as a beginner in the sport, there's training hard. And then there's this incredible leap, huge leap.
Crazy.
to even thinking that you could be professional. Like, how did that transition
happen?
I'll
tell you something, Steve. I was like, since the day one, when my father passed away, I remember I got this gi, and I never did something in my life, think it's going to be just my hobby.
Okay.
I always think it's going to be my life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I was playing football at that time, I was thinking about how could I get a professional football player? But I was not that good.
Right.
So I went to jiu-jitsu. The first day I've got my gi, I remember when I got this gi, I said, I'm going to be a champion. I'm going to go to UFC one day. I'm going to be a black belt. And my brother was like, you sure? I said, yeah, I'm going to do everything. The day one, I remember that I used to train. Since day one, I was like, I remember when because I got my gi, and then I went to train there in the small city. The training was three times a week. I remember the first day I was in the gym, we had like our big holiday after. Mm-hmm. And I told the guys, hey, when are you guys going to train again? Somebody told me, we train somewhere, but you have the street to run. Go run. The guy told me like that. I said, okay, nice. So I went to the street. I was running every day. So we came back. I was training like crazy. The day that I was not in the gym, I was lifting, I was running. And 3 months later, I went to Brazilian Championship for the beginners. At that time, I got third place.
As a white belt.
3 months.
Wow.
And then this day, I said, I'm going to be really good at this. I'm going to train hard. And then my head, I said, I need to go somewhere because this city is small, train twice a week, three times. I need to train every day. Mm-hmm. And then I went to Belo Horizonte, big city. Yeah. I had to move. I had to let my family behind. I was crying all the way to Patos, to Belo Horizonte, crying. But I told my brother, before my departure, I told him, listen, he told me like he was legal. You sure you want to go? I said, man, listen, I go. Before 26, I'm going to be black belt, and I'm going to go to UFC. He told me, are you sure? I said, yeah, you will see. And then I went to Belo Horizonte. I got this bus. I went inside this train station, the bus station, and my brother told me, Igor, are you sure you go? I said, man, I go. Just trust me.
Wow.
And I went there. I remember in Belo Horizonte, I was the guy who trains more in my gym. It was every day training. And that's how everything started.
Wow. What a story. And I'm going to ask one more question, then we're going to go for our first commercial break. Where do you put that, or how do you put that confidence? Would you say it was confidence to make that statement to your brother? Was it confidence? Was it faith? Was it What was it?
It's both together. Work as everything depends on you, and pray as everything depends on God. That's both together. I always know that if you work hard, things are going to happen for you. You just need to believe. Don't listen to negative people and just go. The worst case situation, you tried. But I was sure about it. I was always sure about it that I could go to UFC, and it was very far. Mm. It's that time was harder to get in UFC than today, because today the kids, they go with 5-6 fights.
Okay.
My time, it was hard. And then I told my brother, imagine you are a white belt and you move into another city without money, without nothing. I had nothing. Just with the will and the faith and the trust in yourself. It was pretty hard, but I've made it.
That's amazing. Well, we're going to dig into that in a second. We will be right back with my guest today, my special guest today, Igor Araujo, who is a professional fighter, fought in the biggest promotions in the world. We will be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, and my guest this week, Igor Araujo, who is a legend and champion of professional fighting, and my jiu-jitsu coach and the jiu-jitsu coach of my daughter, and head of the Igor Araujo network of gyms in Geneva and other places. So let's mix it up a little bit, and I want to try to make it a bit more general now. So one of the things that you talk about in your classes to the adults and to the children is around the mental strength from martial arts, and then particularly jiu-jitsu, obviously, because we train jiu-jitsu. But could you elaborate on why you think that's so important? And there's some things that you continuously say about how to live your life, and that you seem to believe comes from training in martial arts.
Yeah, you know, Steve, when you go train, like, it's hard, because jiu-jitsu is like, it's always, you have to fight somebody every day. You're fighting. Okay, sometimes not the toughest fight of your life, but you have to fight. So you have to come back from bad situations all the time. And I don't know why, but on the mat, normally when you have a good atmosphere in your gym, you have a gi, the positive talks, they are always, we are sharing good things. And I remember, I don't know, here, I do my best to teach you guys this kind of mental positiveness, or how to be tough, toughness, mental toughness. But for us, it was, we had to build it. I remember like if you had nothing and then you're thinking about to be somebody one day, before you even train jiu-jitsu, it comes from life, you know. Life in Brazil is pretty hard. For me, it was pretty hard. You have to live day by day. You could not I'm going to do something next month, because I couldn't.
Right.
So, and then when I went to jiu-jitsu, it was really hard, but for me, it was fun, and it was like all about to go far, really far. And I could never let my family, leave my family behind, going somewhere, being negative about it. So I was like, I remember when I was in Belarusian training, sometimes I had nothing. I had to choose before training, or I had to pay the bus to go, or eat like half bottle of yogurt. Sometimes I did nothing.
What were you doing for money at the time?
Nothing.
You couldn't.
I had no money. Sometimes somebody, Igor, let's eat with me.
Oh, wow.
And then I was there. Sometimes I did eat all day.
Wow.
And I remember first when I got there, I got a job in the bank. So I could work for, I don't know, a year, I think so, something like that. And then I quit this job because I didn't like it. The people, they were so rude and bad. So, and my goal was just, for me, the bank was just my sponsorship, you know. I didn't have it because people used to talk, yeah, you have a bright future here, but not for me. And I remember when I quit this job, I was training three times a day, but with an empty stomach. Sometimes I went to eat with my professor, with my friends. Igor, let's go eat with me, because they knew that I couldn't eat at home. So, but every day I was there. I was there every day. So I was a purple belt. I could teach somewhere.
Okay.
But my salary was just to pay the buses.
How long did it take you to go from a white belt to a purple belt?
I got my blue belt in 6 months.
Wow.
And then I got my purple like 2 years later.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like because I was training like crazy. I remember when I first got in the gym, they used to beat me there bad because I was not that good. And then I was training every time. Vacation, it was a rich neighborhood. Because the gym that I trained there, it was one of the best in Belo Horizonte. Okay. But I didn't have money, but I sold my computer to pay. So I sold my computer and then I paid a year with this. And then what I did, I was like, they were in vacation because they had money. I didn't have, so I was training. Who is here? Yeah, I was training. Yeah. And every vacation, when they came back, I was doing better things. Doing better. And then I started making good results, like purple belt, brown belt. And then I could see the things, but in my head, my goal was to go to UFC one day.
So just because we're a broad church, I should have done this maybe at the top of the show, but for anyone listening, how would you explain what jiu-jitsu is versus karate or any of these different sports? Like, how would you explain it to someone that's never heard of it?
Yeah, jiu-jitsu is a lot about what your professor is teaching you. Mm-hmm. Like karate, you go there and you are going to have a book. You're not going to follow some instructions and that's it. Yeah. But it's also good. You know, but jiu-jitsu is about which kind of too many competitions you have to go. Mm. And you compete and you learn with people. You see, you know, I remember we went to Rio sometimes. We are in Belo Horizonte. We had to drive 6 hours to go to Rio.
Yeah.
Five guys in one car. Sharing like a little coxinha, you know what I mean? Sharing like for 6 hours. So, so this gym that I used to be in Brazil, that I used to train at the beginning, it was like everything was too hard. So that's why. But from there, we got three guys in UFC.
Oh, really? So
we have this guy, Rafael dos Anjos. He was champion.
Rafael dos Anjos. Okay.
Yeah, he came. We got the belts together, brown, purple. We get this Matheus Nicolau. He was in UFC too. Myself, we had so many good guys there. And we are all at the same mats training every day.
And how would you explain why is the UFC the biggest promotion? Because it's not just jiu-jitsu, right? Ultimately, it can be mixed martial arts is more than jiu-jitsu,
Dana White's
right?
The smartest guy in the world.
Dana White.
Dana, he's so smart. He's, I like that guy, the way he talks, the way he make like a stone become a gold like this. You know, I've been with him because I was in the Ultimate Fighter, reality show in Las Vegas. I spent like 6 weeks with Dana White almost every day.
And did you get, so the Ultimate Fighter for everyone listening is a reality show where they pick people to compete against each other in a fighting reality show to get a UFC contract. Is that correct?
Yeah. Okay. That's it. Like you get there, you go for the big selection, and then a year later they call you. You come here and you don't know what's going on. So I was in Geneva already.
Right.
I went there to make a test, and then I decided to go to move Geneva to US. I went to the best MMA gym at the time,
which was
Jackson's. Wink MMA, that George St. Pierre, John Jones, we had Rashad Evans at that time, had so many tough men, fighters there. And I was there. Diego Brandão was there, but Diego was a lightweight, but I was the only heavyweight there at that time. And they used to kill me there every day. Like, kill me there. I was like, before training, I was shaking, asking myself, what am I doing here? And then I went there. First week there, I met John Jones.
Wow.
I was training with him and became friends. So I helped him, trained a lot.
And just for everyone listening, John Jones is considered to be the greatest of all time.
All combat sports. He's one of the top five sportists of all time. He's a monster. And then I went there, made the test to go. And then I was like already a year there in Albuquerque, 2 years. And then they called me. It was crazy because my phone was not working. Crazy. I don't know. That's why I tell you, God, he does things that we never, it's hard to understand.
Okay.
Because my phone was not working because I was like Geneva to US and my phone was off.
Okay.
Off because I was not using my phone anymore. And then one day, I don't know why, I turned it on.
Just one day?
One day I turned it on when I saw a voice message. And then I turned it on and, hey, Igor, how are you? The UFC, we want you to come for the Ultimate Fighting test. I say, how? My phone is not working.
Wow.
How did I got this? And then me and my wife start shouting like crazy, crying.
Because that's
everything.
The dream.
Is that it, was the dream, but I was not expecting.
Right.
Not at all. But, and then I say, okay, but you have to come tomorrow. That's why. So I pick up the phone one day before.
Wow. That's crazy.
It's crazy to believe and crazy to understand. But for people, but for me, it's understandable because I know that God made everything.
Right.
And then I went there. I called them. I say, hey, it's Igor Araujo. Do you call me? Yeah. You have to come tomorrow. Send me your name, where you are. We are going to pay everything for you. They paid. I went there. They made some tests. And then they say, go back. Let's see what's...
Like sporting tests or like they did some fights.
Interviews.
Oh, interviews. Okay.
What else? The weight. I don't know. The drug test and everything.
I imagine the drug test for you is quite easy given...
nothing. I had a friend there at that time. He had to buy a bag of pee, fake pee, because he was smoking all day. And he said, Igor, I need to fake something. I said, man, but they are going to see your penis. He said, yeah, I have a fake
penis as well.
Crazy. And the first time I saw this in my life, it's crazy. But he didn't get he didn't get picked.
Okay.
And then I was like, okay, if it happened now, it means something.
Yeah.
Then I went there, I made the test. I was like completely in shock. And then they say, okay, get back home. We will see. Then I went to Albuquerque and John Jones. Igor, you went to the Ultimate Fighter? I say, man, I went there to make some tests. No, it's going to be good. You will see. Very positive, man.
Was he world champion at this point? Or was he?
He just got his belt.
He just got the belt.
Yeah. Wow. And I was his coach when he got his belt.
Wow.
Yeah. Because when I came there, that's why we became so good friends. Because when I got there, people used to come because Brazilians against Americans, there's at that time we had this like very, very high rivalry. And then John Jones was the only one who was nice with me. Hey, what's your name? My name is John Jones. I say, nice. And then we were rolled some jiu-jitsu. I say, are you good? Can you help me for my next fight? I say, yeah. And then I knew, but I asked him, who are you fighting? He said, I'm fighting Shogun for a belt. I say, oh man, crazy. And then I start doing with him the same thing that Shogun used to do.
Okay.
Some sweep from the Coyote Guard. There's some stuff. And I was always sweeping him. And he said, man, how can you do that? I was teaching him. And then I spent like 4 weeks training with him every day. Every day, just John Jones and myself. And sometimes sparring, sometimes this kind of thing. And then he got his belt. He told me, Igor, come here. You are going to be my corner. But I said, I don't want to be your corner. He said, why? I said, because you fight a Brazilian guy.
Oh, yeah, that's tricky.
I don't want to fight against the Brazilians.
Yeah.
At that time, I had this, you know? I still have it, but today, they don't care. They go. And I say, no, I'm going to help you, but I don't want to be in your corner, man. But I was in the hotel with him, training with him every day during the fight, cutting weight, everything.
That's incredible.
And then he got the belt, and then I came back. I'll say, okay.
So, and when, like, can you explain, because there are a tiny number of people that have ever fought in the UFC, right? Listening, in the world. So I imagine almost no one listening has experienced what you experienced.
Mm-hmm.
Can you try and explain what it's like fighting on TV in some way, like to people?
Steve, I'll tell you something, man. I don't like TV.
Okay.
I don't like this kind of thing. I did because I loved it. I loved it. I loved to be there. I felt like I was a samurai, a gladiator, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why in all my career, I've got 40 pro fights all over the world. I never say no for one fight.
Right.
because for me, I had the obligation to go there. And we had zero social media at the time. Mm-hmm. It was just for the owner. Like, okay, I'm going to fight there. And for me, it was not like, I remember when I went there, I told myself, that's my dream. I remember when I went to the Ultimate Fighter. So I went there, I got depressed there inside because it was really hard to stay away from my family.
Yeah.
You had zero contact with the people out of the show.
I've seen some bits of it. It looks very intense.
If you see my picture after, you see that I was smashed.
Right.
But my brain, I got like bad. I was crying every day. I couldn't be well there. I don't know why.
Did you have children at this point?
I have one. No, I have two, Enzo and Davi. I had my wife, Mariana, and she had to take the plane U.S. to Geneva by herself with the two kids.
That's a long
And I
flight.
Felt so guilty.
Yeah.
I was like, why? I'm doing this. And I was in the show, think about it. But it's going to be good for them. We are going to make money. I said, but life for me is not about only money, something like that. And I was feeling bad inside the house. I remember I won the first match because you have to win the first match to be in the house. So you had also the risk to go and lose and get kicked out. So I was there, I won the first fight.
Yeah.
And then I was there, I was so happy, big house. We could eat everything you want. Dana White there, you see the men there. And then, okay, nice, but every day, like, first we had to keep the weight very low. So no carbs, no sugar.
Right.
The brain start like depressed.
Yeah.
And then I was like, thinking about them, about my family. I was like, man, why? I'm already like, if I tell people.
Did you like lose your way a bit?
Yeah, I've got lost there. Because the thing is like, if I was in the Ultimate Fighter when I was 27, 28, I'm sure that I would be the champion there.
Okay.
But I was already 34, 33, and tired. My body was completely messed up, full of injuries. And then, you know, I have a good friend there. He was with me. He was the same situation. We were the same situation, family, and also a lot of fights. So we are tired of it. Go again and train again. And you had to train like killing people because you had to prove there every day. But I was doing really good at the first 2 weeks because I was beating everybody in the training. I won the first fight, but I had a concussion getting into the show. My first fight was tough. I got so many elbows on my head. There, I remember the first 3 days there, I was waking up to go to the bathroom at night and I was falling on the bed.
Do they check you for that stuff?
No, they don't. And I couldn't tell anybody because if I tell, they kick me out.
You kick you out.
So a friend of mine, he's still my friend, Michael Hill, he was on my side. He told me, Igor, you're not good, man. Should tell somebody. I said, man, I'm not telling you. Don't tell anybody. But he saved me from the first fight because they were about to put me to fight like a day later, 2 days after getting to the house.
Okay.
But he told Roy Nelson, was one of the coaches, big Roy Nelson. And Roy Nelson told, if he's like that, I don't want him fight right now.
Right.
And I was bad. Throwing up because I had a concussion. It's like, if you have, you know how hard it is to deal with this. And then I was like, man, what can I do?
Do you feel like this is a big, becoming a much bigger topic with combat sports and any head injury stuff. Do you think it's like, should they do more or it's just part of the sport?
It's part of the game.
Right?
If you don't want to, that's a bad word, sorry, but if you don't want to shit, you don't eat.
Right.
That's the thing. If you're there inside, it's part of the game. But right now, UFC is paying a lot of money for fighters who had the mental issues, and I'm getting some money too.
Oh, they have like a fund.
Yeah, no. They a big. They have a fight foundation that they fought Kung Lee, something action against UFC. They are going to pay $357 million.
Wow,
sharing for some fight. I'm inside. That's good. I'm happy.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm getting some, but the thing is like, it's part of the game. If you don't want to get hit in your face, don't go fight anymore.
Yeah. Have you seen rugby? You know the game rugby?
Yeah.
So like there's lots of stuff they've done in rugby to make it safer. But at the end of the day,
it's contact.
It's contact.
Yeah. In the rugby, at least you cannot get hit in the head. You get it. But football, NFL, you can. Yeah, and you have this and it doesn't work.
It's crazy.
Because your head shakes anyway. Yeah. So it's part of the game.
And can I, because obviously there are some people who come out of the combat game in bad shape mentally.
Yeah.
And there are some people that don't.
No, like myself, I'm talking about my, I saw like a last week a fighter. He was in the podcast talking.
Yeah.
You can see that his brain is not there anymore. He doesn't speak well anymore in Portuguese.
Okay.
It was pretty bad. And I, that's for sure some hits that he got in his brain.
Yeah.
In the head. Thanks God I'm okay. You know, I went to the, like last year, went to the, they have a huge conference here in Geneva about mental trauma.
Oh, yeah.
I was invited. I went there and I was speaking with the doctor. He told me, like, you look good for somebody who got like 40 professional fights. And you speak well, you say, okay, nice. But I'm getting checked this week. Last week I did something because I don't feel my hand sometimes. I don't feel the left hand. Sometimes I wake up, I don't feel my right hand. I don't feel the left hand. Sometimes I, you know, my head, like I feel like choking something. It's pretty crazy. My memory is bad.
Okay.
And, but it is what it is.
I mean, at least you don't have a history of alcohol and drugs, right?
Exactly.
Right?
Nothing.
Which makes it a lot worse.
Exactly. Some of the, I have so many friends, they are drug addicted. UFC fighters, huh? Heroin, cocaine, because they can't get away from this fight life.
No, and also, as I understand it, we'll go for a break in a second. As I understand it, like, it becomes a vicious circle, which is, that you've got mental health issues, which you then medicate with alcohol, which then makes it worse and makes it worse and makes it worse.
Painkillers.
Yeah, exactly.
Heroin, opium. Yeah. And it's everything linked.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Thanks God I don't have nothing of that.
Right, we're going to go for a final commercial break with my guest on this week's show, Igor Araujo, professional fighter. And then we will be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's show with my guest today, Igor Araujo, who is a legend and champion of the combat sport and martial arts. So Igor, I want to just touch on a couple of things. One of the things that blew me away when I started to train with you was when I brought my daughter to the first class and it was you that was taking the kids' training. This legend of the sport, this champion, was taking the children's training. That's really important to you. And why is that so important to you?
Steve, I will tell you something. We spoke about my dream and everything. So I did everything nice. I was always nice with people. And then one day, I remember I was 2-0 UFC. Two fights, two wins. I was really good there. UFC was called. They were calling me, where do you want to fight? Your money's going to be better. And then my wife got cancer, Mariana. She had like cancer. So at this time, when I went to UFC,
so you won two fights. You're in the dream.
I went to the Ultimate Fighter. I was not okay there, so I lost in semifinals. But I was locked in the house. After that, I want to beat somebody that was in the house with me. So I fought a show in California. Okay. And they could sign both of us to fight. So I smashed him in California. And for me, that was it. I say, okay, I'm not fighting anymore.
Okay.
I'm good with that. And it was not UFC yet. And then one day UFC called me. Igor, we need you. My manager, Alex Davis, at that time, he called me, Igor, we have a fight for you in UFC in 3 weeks. And then I say, no. Okay, so you are going to fight to have a four fights contract and that's it. So I went, boom, straight. But the day that I was cutting my weight, my wife had a huge surgery to remove a tumor that she had.
Wow.
So.
And this was all happened. Like, how did. And she was in Geneva and you were in America?
She was in Geneva and then she got pregnant for the third baby. She was pregnant, Igor Jr., she was pregnant, and then the hormones and everything, she got a big ball in the neck, and then she went to check, it was a thyroid cancer.
Thyroid, yeah.
Yeah, and went everywhere, brain, bone, was stage 4.
Wow.
And then I was like, man, I don't want to fight anymore, because I lost the will. the fire was not on me anymore. I had my kids, and the ultimate fighter killed me because I was like, man, why am I doing this still? I was messed up, my body, and my wife got sick. So I told myself, I don't care about it anymore. I'm going to go. That's my dream. So I'm going to fight. She had the surgery. She didn't tell me.
What?
I was cutting my weight. I went because she didn't want to mess my head before the fight.
Wow.
And then
that is love.
She's amazing. Marianne is
that's
amazing.
That's incredible.
That's love. She's like the best thing that I got in my life that God sent to me is this woman. And then I was in the camera like before the fight in Brazil, in São Paulo, and I was afraid because MMA, you are always afraid.
Are you actually afraid?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You are afraid.
Even the best, they're afraid.
Mike Tyson, if you listen to this podcast, he's saying that before the fight, he cried. He used to cry. Everybody got the same way. I was afraid, like, man, what am I doing this? And then she got in the camera with the big cut here. So what's happened? I got the surgery. They removed the tumor. I said, no. Why you didn't tell me no? Because you have your fight. And then I went there. I beat the guy. I won. I was not expecting to beat him.
Okay.
I was thinking I'm going to lose because the guy was really tough.
Okay.
And I beat this guy. So for me, it was all over. I say, I'm not fighting anymore. I got UFC.
Yeah.
I'm going to take care of my
wife. I did the dream.
My dream. I remember this. I got Alistair Overeem, big guy.
Scary,
I
used to teach, scary guy.
Yeah, scary guy. I used to live with him when I moved to Brazil to here. I lived in his house. He's a good friend. And we were training together in New Mexico, U.S. And I told him, man, I'm going to fight this one. And then it's over for me. I don't want to fight anymore. That's my dream and everything. I don't want to keep going. I know that I cannot be the UFC champ. I'm completely messed up, tired.
Right.
And he told him, yeah, Igor, nice. But think about the money too. And then I walk out, okay, I fight, and then I'm going to finish my contract to get some extra money because I could make okay money. And then I fought when she had this. I had one more fight. I fought UK in London, O2 Arena, very nice
place.
Show too, nice. I still remember this. Sometimes I cry when I remember. And the day, 1 year before this fight, I was watching UFC. I was not in UFC, but I was watching in London. And then I cried. I said, I will never get there. And then I got there. I fought. Amen. When my wife was there, and then I say, I'm not fighting anymore. I'm just finish my contract to get the money that I have. And then for me, it's all over. And then I was like, man, why? Why I'd lose it? To teach the kids. That's, I know, the goal. Everything that I passed through was just to make me strong enough to teach the kids how to be strong. That's why I teach Rhea. I teach all those kids that I have in the gym because I want them to not to pass for the same thing that I passed, because I passed so many tough things and I'm still here. But I want to teach them how to be good, how to be tough. And now I know why. Sometimes I was asking myself, why I got in UFC when I was so tired, and why my wife got tired of, got sick at the same time. And I was asking God, why you did everything? You knew that was my dream. Why? But exactly to teach the kids, to make them strong, to make them better, especially in the world that we live now.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing watching you with them. I mean, it really is truly an inspiring to just to see you with them, this legend, this tower of the sport with the kids. And they love you. They absolutely love you. So we're coming to the end of the show. In a minute, but there's just a couple of things that I want to touch on. If someone is listening and they're trying to get themselves physically fit and they're trying to get their mental health in the right space, like, would you recommend jiu-jitsu, or would you like, what do you think, it's for everybody, everyone can have a go, or do you need a special kind of mentality to do it?
I think jiu-jitsu is for everybody. For you have to go for it, you know, especially if you are a kid. You have to, first of all, check the professor, if he's a good person. Because the sport, the techniques, you can get in YouTube.
Right.
But to have somebody with a good knowledge to teach the kids. For me, I have three kids, three sons. I tell them, I don't know how far you are going to go in this school, but you three are going to be black belt. I don't care about school. Of course, they are going to do good do the school. But for me, the main thing is to have this black belt. Right. Why? Because they are going to be world champion. No, because I want them to have the same knowledge that I have about it. So if you want to get fit, if you want to get tough in your mind, if you want to get ready for everything, if you want to not be afraid of some little things, because today people transform, like they make like problems become huge problems instead of look for the solution. You know
like
what I mean?
Get the perspective, right?
Exactly. So, and jiu-jitsu is not about it. People go and pass your guard and then you have to get it back.
Yeah.
You cannot cry there and say, what can I do? No, you just get it back.
Yeah.
And then if you cannot today, you go tomorrow. You know what it is, honestly.
I do.
You can tell them better how jiu-jitsu helped you.
I mean, for me, I've always liked challenges and doing different things, and I've always been sporty. The thing that I love about it is I call it enforced humility. Like you have to come in and you have to be humble and submit to the process. You know, and there might be some, you have some good days, you have some bad days, but you can't, the only way to do it is to just appreciate the process and just learn. And I love the difficulty of it and the fact that it's all about overcoming difficult situations and trying to figure a pathway through, as well as maintaining that humility. I think it, you know, it's a really, in this day and age, it's really good medicine to receive humility in as much as possible. And that's one of the reasons why I love
I remember
doing.
One of our first classes, you called me dude. I said, man, I'm not your dude, I'm your professor.
That's true.
And since then, I went back home, I say, I'm pretty sure Mariano, Steve will never train again. And that's how you came back.
Yeah.
So you have learned humility. Absolutely. So that's what I'm saying, like jiu-jitsu put the you are going to share the mat with the same people, with the same respect. We have no flags, we have no political inside. We just go there to train, respecting the mat, respecting the gi, and getting tough time, but not crying because of it. Just looking for the way to get better. And that's why I think jiu-jitsu should be something that you have to do for kids.
Well, on that note, there's no better way to stop the show. So thank you so much for coming on, Igor.
Thanks to you, Steve. Big pleasure.
And if people want to find out more about you or more about the gym, like where do they go? Where do they find you?
You just go. My Instagram is at Igor Araujo JJ, and you can go www.igoraraujo.com.
And we'll put all of that in the press about the show. But anyway, thank you so much.
Thanks
coach.
To you.
Thank you.
Thanks to you.